Let the show begin. You guys have fun out there today.
Hello, and welcome to New Shooter Canada. Please remember that the show's content is simply the opinions of the hosts and our guests. So, without delay, let me introduce our hosts, George, Tom, and Kelly.
Hello, and welcome to episode 86 of New Shooter Canada. I'm one of your hosts, Thomas Donnelly, and to my right, I have our other host, Mike.
Hey.
Hissin? Hello, Mike.
And to my left, I have our lovely co-host, Miss Kelly.
Lynn?
How's everybody doing tonight?
It's like fill in the blank. Hello.
Well, nobody can really see who's on my left or my right, so we're improving.
What? Okay. Anyways,
how's everybody doing tonight?
Oh, wonderful.
Good as always.
Yeah.
Okay, so Mike, we'll start. What did you do with guns this week?
I went through and I sorted all the rest of my 9mm brass by head stamp. After that, I reloaded about 100 rounds, and I took them to the range later in the week, and I tested out the different brands to see how they grouped. Kind of mixed results. Seemed to be all over the place. I'm not sure if it was more of me than it was the brass. On Friday, I went out to EOSC and helped set up for provincials all day.
Oh, did you?
Yep. Went out there. That was all day long. And then on the Saturday, all the ROs were shooting, so I didn't go. So I went to the range, practiced. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, today I went and shot provincials.
How'd you do?
I came third in my... How do I say it? Division and class. So I came third in the SSP, which is stock service pistol, in the Excellent. Marksmanship group. There you go.
Excellent.
Yeah, so that was my first major match. It was very, it was a whole new experience. Like there were, I don't even know how many, there were tons of people there. It took all day long. There was 8 stages. It was a good time though.
Good for you.
Yeah.
You did really well.
Sounds like fun.
Thanks.
Okay. And I guess George isn't here, so we won't ask George what he did with guns this week. He's still on. Actually, he's just going over the bridge in Windsor right now, is he not?
Sure.
We're trying to get him on the show, but we may come back and have George come on later. So I guess I'll do what I did with guns, and then Kelly can come after me. That way we can do the next story. So I did the same thing as Mike. I reloaded in 100 rounds of those new aim point projectiles that I purchased from Williams. Accuracy's been okay, but nothing special. It's okay practice round, but the quality control has been really bad on this first lot from them. So far, I've had over a dozen damaged and deformed projectiles that were just unusable. Bullet weights were very inconsistent. I weighed them all just to see, because I wanted to make a box of match ammo just to see how it would group. My weights range from 121.1 grain to 127.9 for a projectile that's supposed to be 124, so I wasn't really impressed. The plating is also very spotty, but the diameter remained fairly consistent, but I wasn't able to find enough ammo to put a box through. The 230 grain aim projectiles in 45 ACP were just as bad. The bullet weights range from 225 to 231.5 grains. So I gave up even check. I did 30 rounds and I gave up. And again, I had several damaged bullets in the 30 that I did weigh. Okay. So for comparison,
Hold on.
Yeah.
So what exactly are you going to be doing with these? Are you using them from competitions? Or are you using them just to shoot? Or what are you doing with them?
I wanted to use them for the Orso League at the club. So I noticed when I was sighting it in, I was having a few flyers, but I was benching it. So I couldn't see why the bullets were going up a couple of inches when it was in a pistol rest. It shouldn't have been happening. And that's why I figured out the difference in the bullet weight. I'm having some really light projectiles in there. So I wanted to separate and find, you know, a couple boxes of all the same weight or very, very close. Mm-hmm. So I know I'd have the same weight projectile. And I just couldn't do it. I had about 300 left, and I couldn't even get enough sorted to get a box.
So
the most I had of the same weight was maybe 10.
So what are you going to do with them then?
I'll just practice ammo.
Okay.
That's all I'm going to do with it. Just go up.
Yeah. Because if they're not really consistent, yeah, you can use them for practice, but that's about it, right?
Well, so I was talking with Bond, too, at Firearms Outlet about them, too, and he says that's what he does. He's got some left over, and he just uses it for practice because it's just not usable for competition.
Okay.
But what I did is that I also had I wanted to compare bullet weights for some of the ammo I had in stock. So I forgot that I had a whole box of the Wolf 147 grain enclosed base, the total metal jacket. So I decided to weigh out the Wolf, since I didn't have any Camp Pros left. First of all the Wolves were flawless. They're, because they're made by Barry Bullets. I never realized that. Actually, I contacted and I spoke to Wolf today, and he told me that until 2010, they were using the AIM projectiles, and of course, they had problems with them. And then from 2010 to 2015, the Wolf, TMJ bullets were Campro. And then in 2015, he switched over, and now all the TMJ bullets are Barry bullets. So that's good to hear. There was not one bad one or damaged one in the box. Secondly, the weight variations on the Wolves were minimal. The lightest was 145.6, and the heaviest was 147.3 out of the 50 that I checked. The majority were all around 146.2, 146.4. So there was only a 1.7 grain difference between the 50 random ones that I pulled out of the Wolf box. Considered to the aim point, there was a variation of 6.8 grains on the 9mm and 6.1 grain on the 45. So I'm happy with I'm quite surprised that the Wolves were as nice as they were. The thing that surprised me is that the Wolves seem to be, they're fully enclosed, full metal jacket.
Yep.
While some total metal jackets are plated, these seem to be jacketed and not plated at all. The store that I purchased them from said they were plated, but I think they're mistaken because the base of a bullet tells me a different story. It's definitely a full metal jacket with a plating on the rear face. You can see where the lead was injected into the metal case, leaving a rim. Then a plating was applied to the exposed lead. So, because I've got some 230 grain also downstairs that's just straightly plated, and the back of the bullet's completely flat. So
he usually uses FMJ.
Yeah, you can tell the difference. So far, I remain unimpressed with the AIM projectiles. They had a bad reputation amongst reloaders in the past for poor quality, and I see no change in the quality control for this new product. You know, I'm glad to see another Canadian manufacturer in the market, but there has to be some quality improvement if the AIM wishes to recover lost ground. And I would suggest changing the company name because AIM is not well received by the shooters. I posted the pictures of some of the damaged stuff on Facebook, and I had a lot of negative comments from people who said they'd never use AIM products again, and I can see why. Besides that,
just hold on a second. Where's AIM at? Where they're out of?
The original company stopped in 2010, I believe, and a new guy picked it up recently, and he's located in Hamilton.
Where's he getting the projectiles from?
The projectile he's making, actually, he has the machinery from the old company.
Mm-hmm.
So any defects or problems is still going to be inherent with the tooling that he's using. The one thing Bond told me is that he doesn't actually do the plating. There was a company that's doing the plating for him, mm-hmm. who's never plated bullets before. So I can see why the first run, the plating may not be really, really good. And actually, I got lot number one. This is the very, very first lot that this guy's ever produced. So I'm hopefully he has time to improve his tooling and his methods, and the product quality does improve, I hope.
Okay.
It was just nice seeing another option out there on the market.
Mm-hmm. You want to explain the difference between plating and jacket?
Well, a plated bullet is just a plain lead bullet, and they put it in an electro, just like you get nickel plating or chrome plating. They just put a small amount of copper in a chemical bath, and it electrically charges the bullet, and the copper, this powder, it just puts a light coating on the bullet. It's electroplated. Where a full metal jacket, it's actually a metal cup, and then the lead is injected into the cup. So with that type of bullet, most of the time you have an exposed base at the back of the bullet. If you have a full metal jacket, you'll see the copper cup, but the back of the bullet will be plain lead. Because nowadays a lot of the ranges like an encased bullet just for keep lead vapors out of the air. you have companies like Winchester make WinClean, where it's the bullet's totally enclosed in the back, and this is supposed to stop the lead from vaporizing as it's being ignited by the powder in the primer.
Okay.
It's actually the advantage of using, say, a plated bullet or a full metal jacket bullet is that you're not going to get all the lead built up in your barrel compared to a plain lead bullet. Also, there's a big cost factor. Plain lead is a lot cheaper than a full metal jacket, and the plated is a little bit cheaper than a full metal jacket. So it's a cost savings, too.
Okay.
What else did I do? Oh, yeah, I went to Firearms Outlet. Fred called me on Wednesday, and I picked up the donation on Thursday of 1,000 rounds of the new 9mm house brand ammo for the charity raffle table. And I opened up 10 boxes. I know I shouldn't have, but I opened up 10 boxes because I just wanted to see what brass was being used. And I'm happy to say there was no mixed head stamp. All the cases were spear brass. They all look really, really good. They're all full metal jackets. So a big, big thank you to Firearms Outlet. I've shopped there a few times, and it's a great store with a really knowledgeable staff, excellent customer service.
Okay. So, question.
Okay.
They have excellent customer service, by the way. But they do. Are you going to replace the one that you opened? Just asking.
I just opened the box, look at the brass, closed it, and put it back in again.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't sealed. They weren't taped shut. They were just tabs in the end. So I didn't break any boxes open. The box is open. Okay. It's not like the Wolf ones where they're actually taped shut.
Yeah, they are. Okay.
Yeah, these weren't taped shut.
Okay.
The one thing that gets me when I go through, when I went to the open house for Firearms Outlet Canada, the very first day, they actually had a security guard in they've got what we called, what's the room when you go through the front? The dead man room?
What are you talking about?
When you walk in, when you walk in to the store, there's a little ante area. And then once in the ante area, you have to get buzzed in. Well, when I first went there, there was a security guard there for the very first day.
Mm-hmm.
So now when you walk through, you walk through the front door, and you catch something out of the corner of your eye, and you turn around, and it's a mannequin dressed in a security outfit. And it scares the crap out of me every time. But I always have to do a double take, because I walk through the door, and all of a sudden I realize there's somebody behind me, and I turn around, and it's the mannequin, but they put the security outfit on the mannequin. So it scares the crap out of me every time I walk through the store. Every time I do a double take, because I think somebody's standing right behind me. What else did I do? I was going to go to the CSSA Stick to Your Guns dinner. I actually booked yesterday off as an extra vacation day.
Uh-huh.
But I decided to spend time with Terry in the hospital instead. She's been in the hospital for, 6 weeks now?
Uh-huh.
And she's going to be in the hospital for another month. And she's been pretty depressed and down in the dumps. So I thought she could use some cheering up instead. So I surprised her by having a movie night in the hospital room. I got the new Star Wars movie and some popcorn and licorice and pop and candy and crap, and brought my little mini surround speakers for my laptop and spent the evening with Terry. And I think it was just the right medicine she needed.
That's nice.
So, yeah, it is.
I didn't win a gun, but I made Terry feel better, which is good.
Yeah.
So okay. What about you, Kelly? What did you do with guns this weekend?
This weekend?
Okay, within the last week.
Well, actually, it was this weekend, so... I went to the RO course yesterday at the Brockville District Fish and Game Club, so I am now officially an RO, or as Kevin likes to say, the unsafety officer. Yeah.
Who held the course?
CSSA did, so, yeah.
Yeah. Congratulations.
So, well, thank you. I, as well as six other men, were in a room. All day. Anyways, so, and we also shot on the range too, so I shot my 10/22, and yeah, I love that rifle.
Was Jim Drysdale the instructor?
No, Earl DePass was.
Okay.
So, yep, and he's from the Cornwall area. He's also the colonel of the cadet regiment there, so I asked him about if he knew, what's her name? Mary
Allen? Yeah.
Yeah. And that, so I was going to send him the information on her. We have a story about her later, don't we?
Yeah, just a little blurb.
Okay. So anyways, so yeah, Earl did it. So I will be getting my certificate, hopefully, or my updated card. Anyways, in the mail in the next little while. we finished early enough, or I thought we finished early enough, that on our way back to Kingston, we decided to go and stop at SFRC, but we got there just as they were closing, so we didn't stick around. We just said hello to everybody, and then we left as well. So my SFRC day of usual, you know, Saturday trek out there, is kind of, we did it, but we didn't really do it because we shut up when they were closing. So that's about it. Didn't do anything else besides the RRO course. That's about it.
Oh, well. So guns in the news. What do we have for guns in the news this week, Kelly?
Well, I know that last week we were talking about it a little bit because we've seen it on the internet. Last week there was a couple of guys that went into sales, S-A-I-L-S, the store, and they were handing out stuff about the Quebec Long Gun Registry. And I do know that, Thomas, didn't you contact sales and ask them about it and got a response from them?
I did. I contacted sales, and well, I'll just tell you what they said to me. This is from sales. It says, we would like to clarify the situation that occurred at our Laval branch on Sunday, May 8, 2016, where the store manager asked individuals who were distributing flyers and soliciting clients to leave. In accordance with their responsibilities with sale policies, all managers at all sales must at times ensure to provide a sound and pleasant environment to clients without ever having to compromise their comfort or security. Sale has a company-wide policy that prohibits all protests, solicitations on sale property, and whereby the store manager can ask individuals to leave. If individuals do not cooperate, the manager must call upon the authorities as a security measure. This policy and all of sales policies are in place for the benefit and safeguard of our clients at all times. Each sale manager must conform to this security procedure, whatever the reason for the unauthorized gathering, solicitation, or demands. The situation unraveled at Laval sales store on May 8th related to a policy that we put into place to protect our customers. The debate on the firearms registry is an important social conversation. Sales respects the democratic right of each client to stand up for or against this measure. Sales will always respect provincial and federal regulations regards to firearms.
Okay.
So that's the official response I got from sales.
Okay. So originally, what did you send to them? Do you remember kind of what you asked about?
I just said that there was something going on that people were trying to, or wanted to boycott sales, and I asked them actually what had happened.
Okay. Or what their official response is?
Well, I was pretty sure that they wouldn't allow anybody to just come in the store and start engaging their customers. Myself, see, if you've got people standing in the front of the door, you're engaging everybody. You're not approaching your target audience. What I would have suggested, I just would have gone and spoke to the manager and asked him if I could put the petition at the gun counter, because that's where your target audience is going to be. They're going to be at the shooting section with the gun or the hunting sections. If you put them in the front of the store and they're engaging people and there's conflict involved, you got to remember everybody that sells all kinds of merchandise. You're just not going to have hunters. You're going to have, you know, people that are just hikers or campers or canoers. They may not be pro-gun people. So you're setting yourself up for a fail because you're hitting everybody, where your target audiences are the ones that actually own the firearms. So I would have actually gone up to the manager and just asked if I could put the petition at the gun counter. And
I don't think they were doing petition. I think they were handing out just information packages on it, and which is fine. And if you want to do that on public property, but maybe private property is not such a great idea. Not actually, you know, contacting them beforehand. I think that's what happened.
I should have contacted them, because if you just approach everybody that's coming through the store, you're going to have to start having complaints go to head office, and then the manager is going to have to deal with all that. And then since he didn't follow protocol, you know, he could get dismissed or she could get dismissed. So. I don't blame sales for handling it the way they did, because that's their official policy. That's the manager's job. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, if they would have approached it differently and geared it towards their target audience and set something up prior with speaking to the manager, maybe in the hunting section, it might have been more successful and it wouldn't have the outcome that it did have.
But, right. I know that people were upset about it and all that as well, but I also know that there's policies that have to be adhered to as well. I know, like, Thomas and I had talked about this last week, and you know, I know that as somebody who has run a business, a corporate business, I know that the there are policies and things like that as well. And quite honestly, you know, if somebody comes into, whether it be a private business or even a corporate business, and somebody, you know, is handing out stuff and approaching customers and all that, and quite honestly, if they hadn't asked permission first, it's going to cause some hard feelings. And I'll say this, though. If, you know, you decide that you don't want to support sale and you want to boycott them, that's everybody's right to do that as well. Yeah. But I'm saying that, you know what, you really have to actually do the research first before, you know, you start jumping on bandwagons or whatever. So
we have the same policy at work, you know, because it's company policy. And if you start selling or promoting something, special constables are going to come and remove you from the property. It's instantly. But if you approach head office about something, a lot of times we have different fundraising campaigns through schools or stuff, and they make prearrangements, and then it's not a problem.
Yeah.
But if you block the, you know, and start engaging everybody without permission, you're just creating all kinds of problems with yourself. So I'm glad they did it. It's good to see that people are out there and they're protesting, and they want to stop the long gun registry. That's great to see. It's just unfortunate that it ended the way it did. So yeah. I'm not mad at sales. It, you know, if they would have handled it, took a different route to handle it, it might not have worked out the way it did.
Yeah, that's true. Everybody might have handled it maybe a little bit better and that as well. I know that in some places, if you contact places beforehand, like, again, private property or, you know, a corporations, sometimes they'll let you set up a table so that you can actually give out paperwork, you know, so that you can keep the public informed as well. That might have worked as well. So
I know, for example, the sales in Ottawa, the CCFR has approached them, and they let them have pamphlets near the cash register up in the gun section.
That's cool.
They just didn't go in and start doing it. They went up and they asked, and the manager said, sure, yeah, no problem. So, you know, every situation has to be looked at a little bit differently, and there's a right way and a wrong way to approach things.
Okay. So, just hold on. Mike, you got anything?
Nope.
Okay.
I think you two pretty much covered it all, so.
All right.
Yep. It's a really heated debate right now in Quebec.
Yeah, it is.
And, you know, a lot of people are very passionate about it, so I can see how things evolved the way they did. It's just
okay.
Okay, so story two, Mike. What do we have for story two tonight?
The Cornwall Seaway Lions held a check presentation this week, announcing they are getting behind our young sharpshooter friend Mary Patrick to help her achieve her dream of participating in the 2020 Summer Olympics in Tokyo, Japan. The Lions Club donated an unprecedented amount of $7,000 to help Mary's Olympic goals, and is the largest amount ever donated to an athlete by the Lions Club. The money given this week will go toward buying equipment needed for practice and competition.
Yeah, so that is
that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yep.
Excellent. Well, good for her. She's starting to get on her way then.
Yep.
I was actually speaking to her dad a couple weeks ago, and he just said that they were going to the Lions Club. And when he messaged me, he goes, it was driving me crazy. He had to sit on his hands for 2 weeks and not say anything to anybody till it was all approved. So it's excellent. He knew, but he wasn't allowed to say anything. So once they actually did the check presentation and everything, then he messaged me and told me about it. So awesome.
Cool. I love the Lions Club. They're so supportive of all the community events and everything that's going on. That's nice.
You know, the funny thing out there, too, is that there's five local newspapers. They're all promoting her. They're all giving really positive press coverage. There's nothing negative, nothing anti about it. So it's so nice to see that Cornwall is such a shooter-friendly community, especially to a young shooter.
Well, good for her.
Yeah.
And one other thing, Mike?
Yep.
You're sounding so good this week.
Yeah, we like that, Mike.
We love that, Mike.
Thanks.
All right.
Can't wait to hear Sarah on it.
All right.
So what's new in the industry? Well, we're still temporarily changing our what's new into what's new with our sponsors segment. It's our way of thanking the sponsors for helping us achieve our goal for the most successful charity shoot ever. So this week's sponsor, we're going to feature Valkyrie Defense. And since Kelly's actually taken the course, why don't you tell us a little bit about Valkyrie Defense, Kelly?
Well, Valkyrie Defense, we have two guys that have been on the show before. They're both Brian and Jason. Hi, guys. They are the owners of Valkyrie Defense. Now, they are located in Ohio, but they're starting to go out of the province, or not province, states down in the states, not provinces. Anyways, they're spreading their wings. They're going to Michigan. So October 8th, they're having a counter ambush concepts course in Battle Creek, Michigan. So if you actually, we'll start promoting it, I think, on our own page, but if you want to go on to the Valkyrie Defense Group, you can see there they have all of their courses that are upcoming listed there, and you can sign up for there. We went to the Counter Ambush Concepts course way back in, I think it was September of last year. Awesome. Great time in that as well.
Didn't Kevin double open carry when he was down there?
He double open carried in Ohio. Yes, he did. And he loved it. So he went up to a couple of people. Anyways, but it was a really good course to go on. Lots of info. Lots of shooting. I think that we went through on the Saturday of the course itself. I think we went through 1,000 rounds of 9mm. Like we were sharing a little bit with Stacy and that as well. But we went through 1,000 rounds. So.
And this course is actually going to be at Miss Stacy's club, I believe.
Yes, it is. So excellent. As I said, we'll post it on our own Facebook page. But yeah. So yeah.
Okay. Excellent. And the second newest sponsor I just got today. I was speaking to Wolf from Wolf Ammo, and actually his first name is Wolf, and because I was asking him some questions about the 230 total metal jackets that I was reloading today, and I asked him to be a sponsor for the charity shoot, and he said he'd love to, and he's going to donate 5 boxes of 500 rounds projectiles. So thank you very much to Wolf Ammo. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, he's amazing. I love his ammo.
I didn't want to ask him for ammo because we already have a sponsor for ammo. So, but mm-hmm. nobody, I've tried to get projectiles and I wasn't having any luck. And a lot of us reload, so I figured, why not ask him? It's, you know, if it's Barry bullets, it's good stuff. And I've used his 200 grain semi wad cutters in my 1911s, and they love it. I mean, it's a super accurate round. Whether you get even his reloaded stuff, I get the yellow box. 200 grain semi watercolors, and it cloverleaves with my 1911. So hopefully he will get. George wanted 45s, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
But he can't win anyway, so it doesn't. We're not getting 45s, George, because you can't win, and you're the only person we know that actually shoots a single action 45. We're hoping he gives us some 9mm and some 40s and maybe some 45s, but we don't know yet. He just said he's going to give us 5 boxes. So thank you very much, Wolf.
Yeah, and he's here in the Kingston area, so
yeah.
It's going to be nice. So. Yeah.
It's nice. Be easy for him. Won't have to drive very far.
No, he won't. Or we can always pick it up, too. So, okay.
So the main topic this week, we'll do a little disclaimer first. Always make sure your firearm is unloaded before you begin to clean it, and that ammunition is not nearby. So actually, it was Mike that suggested this topic this week. So what I did is that I went on to Otis Technologies, and they have developed 6 basic rules for cleaning every firearm properly. So we'll just go through each rule individually. So, Mike, why don't you take us to rule number 1.
Always clean from the breech to muzzle in the natural direction of the bullet. When you fire your gun, the powder residue and dirt are in the barrel. The chamber and receiver are clean. If you run a brush or patch from the muzzle end, you will push the dirt, residue, and moisture into the chamber and receiver. This is a major cause of stuck cases or problems with lever actions and auto-loading rifles and shotguns. If you push or pull a brush back toward the chamber, you will notice the brush will throw the debris from the bore back into the chamber and locking lugs.
Mm-hmm. True. You're just taking all the garbage and pushing it back into the gun when you want to push it out of the gun.
Yep.
And what about number 2, Kelly?
Center the tip and rod. Be careful not to let either rub the bore. All firearms record their history. This is the reason most people look down the barrel of the firearm. An experienced eye can tell the method of cleaning, the number of shots, and the gun maintenance applied to the firearm. Many marks are caused by people who carelessly let the tip of the rod rub the inside of the barrel. So,
And I also put a little note in there that a bore guide is a good tool to have. I do have them for my center fires. Step number three is use a clean patch surface every time you go down the barrel. This is similar to mopping a floor and rinsing the mop out. When you're using your firearm, you'll get the abrasive dirt in the muzzle. The patch with solvent will flush it out in the shortest distance. If you use this patch surface again, then the dirt will be deposited back in the chamber and the neck. The next bullet down the barrel picks up the dirt and erodes the throat. This is the exact equivalent of cleaning in the wrong direction. And what about number four, Mike?
Never run a brush in the barrel first. Never run a brush. Okay. This will damage the firearm. The brush will pick up dirt, moisture, or powder residue and deposit it in the chamber or receiver. Never dip a brush in solvent. The solvent at the brush core will collect dirt and drop it into the receiver and chamber.
So I guess they're telling you to run a wet patch down the barrel first before you use your brush.
I guess so.
And number five, Kelly?
Never go back and forth reversing the brush. This will bend the bristles on the brush. This is equivalent to bending a wire back and forth until it breaks. You will always ruin a brush if you reverse it while in the bore.
And so, number six is use only a few drops of solvent or lubricant. Many people think that the more solvent, the better. However, this may damage the firearm. Use only the solvent that the patch will absorb. If you see it's too much, the solvent or oil will drip down the trigger mechanism. This will cause a gummy trigger. If you use too much oil, it'll drain back towards the stock and cause a premature of the wood. And you get what's called a soft stock if you get a lot of oil back in there. On a note from us, read your manual. Different guns have different needs when it comes to lubricating parts and bearing surfaces. Just as a couple of suggestions, if you're putting your hunting rifle away for the season, after a thorough cleaning of the bore and the bolt, run a very light patch down the bore and a light coating of oil on a cloth to all the exposed metal surfaces. Remember to move any excessive oils or preservatives from the bore before you use the gun again, though. So if you're storing it for the season, don't forget to wipe up the oil when you go to use it again. On storage, damp basements are not gun-friendly for any storage, so you need to take a few steps protecting your guns if you're actually going to store them in the basement once you've cleaned them. Do not store your gun in a cloth case. A hard case with a few desiccant packages is a better idea. Keep your cases off the damp concrete floor. They will absorb moisture from the concrete. If you've installed a steel cabinet or safe on the floor, use a vapor barrier between the steel cabinet and the floor. If you cannot afford a gun cabinet humidifier, they're $30-$40, even more. Sometimes a low wattage light bulb placed near the floor of your safe works well, keeping your safe warm and dry. A little night light, that's all you need, something really small that just generates a little bit of heat. But it can also be a fire or electrical hazard, so be careful where and how you install it. And remember to abide by all safe storage laws in your location and never store a loaded firearm. So up for discussion, how often should you clean your gun versus field stripping, Mike?
Well, if you're shooting any corrosive ammunition, so you have like an old SKS and you bought a crate of ammo, pretty much you should clean that right away. If your firearm was exposed to water or moisture, if you dip you're at the range and you know when you're done, you dip the barrel into the dirt or the sand, or if you're shooting black powder is also very corrosive. So that's why you always see in the old movies and things like that where they clean their barrel in between every couple of shots. It's because they have to. Yep.
So what is field stripping then?
Field stripping, well, I can describe it for a pistol. For a pistol, it's pretty much described as taking the slide off the frame. And usually taking out the recoil spring and the guide rod as well as the barrel. And pretty much when you have it in those, five parts, that's considered quote unquote field stripped.
So that's just enough. The field stripping is just enough to give you proper maintenance and cleaning of the firearm. It doesn't give you any access to the internals usually. So what would 100% disassembly be then?
Sorry?
What is 100% disassembly be then?
I would describe it as pretty much, if it comes out, it comes out. So, like, you know, if there's a pin in there and it can be physically removed, then it would be removed. At least that's the way I would describe, like, a 100% disassembly. And the reason why you may want to do something like that would be when you just field strip, like, a pistol, there are a lot of moving parts in the trigger area where you could have a buildup of dirt and burnt powder. By taking it all apart, it would allow you to get into every little area. Also, just things like in between some of those moving parts and the frame. There's pretty much no way you could get in between those parts unless you took them completely right out. As for how often you really need to do that, I think that could be up to debate.
I guess if you're an action shooter, you'd have to do it on a regular basis because you're putting so much fouling into the gun all the time.
Yeah, I've never done it, but I've only had my pistol for just over a year now. But with that said, I probably put 4,000 rounds through it. So it's probably time for me to...
That's what we do.
Yeah, probably time to take it all apart.
You haven't done it yet?
No, I never did. I meant to do it at one point in time over the winter where if something got lost, broken, or I got distracted, it wouldn't really be a big deal if I left it sitting in pieces for a couple of days. And then pretty much the shooting season snuck up on me and I don't want to take it apart. Well, actually, I haven't wanted to take it apart up till today in the fear that something would happen to it or I'd lose a part or it wouldn't work when I put it back together. So,
yeah.
Well, when you get most of your manuals, your owner's manual just gives you the basic strip down for cleaning, and they usually recommend that you don't do a 100% disassembly by the user. That said, you can buy takedown reassembly manuals that are available for the more simpler modern firearms, and they can be 100% disassembled by the user if they have a little mechanical ability. Some of the times, reasons you may want to do it, if you have a malfunction that does not stop after the field cleaning, and a careful inspection under the firearm may be needed. If the gun is under warranty, I wouldn't do a 100% disassembly. I would send it off under warranty repair. If the gun's out of warranty, then maybe you want to do it yourself. And what you want to look for is for excessive wear, broken parts, or tired springs. You got to remember, sometimes you may, so you've got a Glock or an M&P and you've got a really, really heavy trigger. So sometimes you may want to replace factory parts with aftermarket parts to reduce your trigger pull or hammer weight. If you do, replace any factory parts. Keep all the original factory parts you remove and reinstall them before sending off the gun to the manufacturer. There's some guy, you know, you get a new gun and you want to lighten it right away, but if something happens to it, you got to send it back into its original condition or the manufacturer will say, no, it's not under warranty. And a case, say, for Ruger, for example, you send a Ruger rifle in and you've got a trigger kit in it, it comes back with Ruger original parts and they don't send back your aftermarket parts. They'll still warrant it, but they'll put back parts under warranty. So you'll lose your nice full quartz and hammer and sear, and they'll put back the heavy stuff back into it. So say you've got some corrosive ammo. How would you actually clean your SKS, Mike?
Well, to be honest, I've never successfully done it, which is why my SKS is in pieces and in a closet, because I never shoot it. For me, every time I took it out, I would try using things like Windex, oil, boiling hot water. Like, I'd actually bring the kettle downstairs in the basement and, you know, at the wash sink and boil water and pour it directly right into it. And every time I'd open up the safe and, oh, look at that. It looks like there's a bit of pitting again. Like, so no matter what I did. So I'm probably not exactly the best guy to ask that question.
I hated my SKS just for that, because I knew I had to clean it as soon as I got home. And I hated having to do it, so I sold it.
So how did you clean it with the corrosive ammo?
I used the Windex. And I found out no matter how much I scrub that stupid thing, the patches are always coming out black. Like, it takes hours to clean the crap out of it. So I clean it the best I can. Then I would just spray DW-40 down the barrel and everything and run a patch through it and put it away. I hated it. I don't, you know, taking the gas system apart, it wasn't worth it. You know, it's a inexpensive. I won't say cheap because it's not a cheap gun. It's, you know, it's actually a pretty sturdy firearm. But, you know, for the new shooter, you can get an SKS $200-$250. So it's a good deal. And if you maintain them, you know, they will last you. And I know people have actually put half decent triggers and, you know, they're a good hunting rifle at 50, 75 yards, but I'm just too lazy to clean the stupid things.
Okay. What about ballistol?
That stuff works good too. I'm not sure how it is on corrosive ammo though. But Barstol is a good cleaner and lubricant.
Yeah, that's one of the things that they're suggesting. I'm looking it up as you guys chat, so continue. I will continue to look.
That stuff's hard to find up here.
Trevor was talking about it the other day. He was talking about patches, so.
Well, you can probably order it from Brownells, but I haven't actually seen it for sale up here yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Anyways.
But, you know, if you want to take care of your gun, it's a quality product.
Yep.
Okay. What about CPL and also Break Free?
Break Free's good.
Or CLP. Yeah, sorry.
CLP.
Yeah.
I think what it is that you want to use the ammonia in the Windex. I think that's the main reason that people do it, because then it stops the corrosive element of the ammunition. Mm. You have to remove the corrosiveness before you even lubricate it.
Yeah. Okay.
And one thing I do seem to remember reading somewhere, if you put WD-40 into your firearm, couldn't that have adverse effects with it eating away at the good steel as well as the rust?
No, but the thing you got to really remember about DW40, it's water. WD40 means water displacement. So it works great on plain metal. You do not want to get that stuff on any camo dip stock, because it also removes glue and any tacky substances. So if you've got camo dipping on any firearm, it'll destroy the finish of the firearm. It's only good on bare metal. If you've got anything synthetic with a covering on it, it will destroy it. It'll separate it.
Okay.
So how did you get the rust off your SKS?
There's the stuff inside the bore never came out. Plain simply, it never did. But for other like rust on the outside of it, pretty much you can use just some solvent and a soft cloth, and just kind of wipe it over a few times and see if that will take it off. If that doesn't work, you could use like an eraser or a little bit of like a polishing compound. Just pretty much enough abrasiveness just to take it off, but you really don't want to use too much, because you will scratch your firearm and you will also ruin your bluing.
Yeah, I find the eraser works good on stainless steel.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so that's kind of the hazard of doing it, that you could ruin the finish on your firearm. If it's still there, if it's too deep, it won't come out. You can use oil and the finest steel wool you can find, like the smallest stuff, and very gently try and rub it off. You're getting into the territory of, you know, you're more likely to ruin the bluing or any other finish on your firearm, but it will get that deeper rust out. And if it's really that bad, you can always take it to a gunsmith.
Sometimes taking it to a gunsmith is a good idea.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some type of product. So brushes. What type of brushes and do you use, Mike? And why do you use that particular type of brush?
I use a couple of things. I use a boar snake most of the time. A boar snake is a cloth, kind of like a rope, with a weight at one end, and at the other end it has bristles embedded into the rope. And then after that is kind of like a big fluffy section. That really is good for doing quick cleaning. Like, you just got back from the range, you don't have time to do a full detailed clean of your firearm. That, and pretty much what you do is you drop the weighted end down through your barrel, and it will come out the other end. because the rope is, I don't know, 3-4 feet long. It come out the other end, and then you can start pulling on that weighted end, and it will, you will pull the bristles and the and like the big fluffy part would act, which acts as like an absorbent, I guess you'd call it, like a patch to kind of clean everything out. And lots of times I'm just running that through my barrel a few times just to kind of clean it out. When I do a full cleaning of it, lots of times I'm using patches, solvents, oils, and on the end of a rod, I'll use the brass brush.
And I'll use brass.
Use brass because brass won't damage steel. It's okay. Softer than steel is, so if I don't know how to describe it, the steel will win pretty much. It'll push the brass out of the way so you won't damage it, but it is still rigid enough that it will help break apart and take out some of those some of that carbon buildup that you'd find in like a barrel.
Do you use a lot of the plastic brushes?
I'm gonna say no because I don't know what you're talking about.
If you've got buildup, say on a blued finish, you don't want to really be taking a brush. Because I go to Princess Auto, and you can buy a set of different brushes. So they've got the plastic or the polymer, like a toothbrush almost, and then you've got the copper brush, and then they have a steel brush. So take that steel brush and throw it away someplace, because that's going to do more damage than anything else. I usually, if I'm doing any work on the bluing, I'll use the plastic bristles. Especially like my Kimber Gold Match has got a really nice blue finish, so I don't want to scratch it up at all. Other thing I use is those plastic dental picks. They're really, really good for getting in behind your extractor and cleaning the bolt face and stuff. A really fine tip plastic tool is a good little tool, because if you just start rubbing it back and forth, it'll take off whatever residue's on there. So I use a variety of different things, but I find you can get plastic pick. They're like dental tools, but they're plastic. You can buy those from Brunel's, but I really find those plastic toothbrushes work really well because they're really, really thin. And if it breaks, you can just shred up and get another one. That's what I like to use.
Okay.
I've used a toothbrush as well.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Now that you mentioned what it is, I understand what you're saying, and yes, I can relate to that. Yes, I do use something like that.
My dental hygienist gets really mad at me because I go get my teeth cleaned. She gives me a toothbrush. I said, "Great, another gum cleaning tool." She says, no, don't say that." And that's what I do because I use an electric toothbrush, so I don't use the stuff that the dentist gives me. So I say, "Do you have any of the hard bristles? I like the hard bristles. They're really good for cleaning guns." And she gets quite bent out of shape. But so, what type of solvents or cleaners do you use, Kelly?
Well, mostly just the CLP.
And what's that?
It stands for cleaner, lubricant, and preservative. So yeah, use that. Just basically, I use it on a boar snake. Like Mike was talking about, and then also on patches and that as well. So when it run it through that way, it will it'll clean things up, it'll lubricate things, and it'll preserve things. It's basically what it stands for.
Yeah, it's a good thing. I use Break Free. It's a CLP product, and it works really, really good. Sometimes what I'll do on my boar snake, you notice that at the very end of it, it's looped.
Yep.
It's not a closed end. Sometimes I'll just put a patch on that too. So at the very end, you draw a dry patch. Now, the good thing about boar snakes, they are machine washable. Mm-hmm. So it's good. You know, if you use it a few times, it is a good idea to clean it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. They're good if you actually just, you know, you don't have time or, with my old 1022, it was really hard to pull everything apart. So I'd run a boar snake through it a few times. Just put some CLP on the boar snake itself and just run it through. So
yeah, I do the same thing. Just a quick cleaning. It doesn't do anything for your action, but it keeps your barrel clean at least.
Yep.
Yep.
So
go ahead.
Go ahead, Mike.
I was going to say, so when you go to the store and you see the shelves and shelves and shelves of cleaning supplies, why, like for the new shooter, why would you grab one can over the other?
Well, a lot of them have specific purposes, like the hops or, what's the other one I was using? You have some that are designed, will take powder residue, Others are designed to remove copper fouling. So if you shoot a lot of center fire, you are going to get copper fouling built up. And it's some of the regular cleaners don't really do a good job at removing copper fouling. So you want a specific product to remove that copper fouling. Like we were talking about for the black powder or the corrosive, there's products made just for black powder and corrosive. There's also black powder or solvents made for specific needs that you're going to need. Cleaning needs.
Okay, so you'd have to kind of shift through everything and figure out what you need.
Yeah, because sometimes hops number 9 it isn't going to do. If you've got a lot of copper fouling built up, you might have to use something a little bit more aggressive. Then you're going to have ones that are like the CLP, which is it's like a do-it-all. But it may not be that aggressive on copper fouling, so you may want to use something a little bit stronger. Just read the directions on the bottle to see how you're properly supposed to apply it to the firearm. Okay. And then you want to buy, you know, some type of lubricant, you know, oil versus grease. Because once you've cleaned everything off, you're still going to have to lightly lubricate the firearm. So, what's the difference between oil versus grease, Mike? Like, why would you use grease and compared to oil?
Grease is a little bit thicker. I actually find it a little bit easier to work with, just because when you put it somewhere, it stays there.
True.
It doesn't run, you know, you don't try and put a drop on one spot and, oh, look at that, now it's in my action of my firearm or something like that. So I find it a little bit nicer to work with. The problem is when it comes to picking your oil or your grease or whatever you decide to lubricate it with, a problem that you can have up here in Canada, I can't say I've had it specifically, but people have said that their oil or their grease will start to freeze in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that could be a big consideration as to what you want to get. And I don't know how true it is, because I've never had this problem before, and I use both grease and oil on my firearm.
Mm-hmm.
But I have heard that grease will freeze up earlier than oil.
It thickens, it congeals. So I found when I was shooting outside a lot, the first couple of rounds where the firearm was cold, I might have a few failures. Once the firearm started warming up, then it was okay. And if it got cold again, then I started having these failures. So,
yeah.
I've never figured out
which lubricant it is. I've heard that about Frog Lube as well, that it actually will thicken a bit, but it's still good stuff. So,
yeah, it's great for cleaning. I wouldn't use it for lubrication though.
Mm-hmm.
So, where should you apply oil and how much, Kelly?
Oh, I don't know. If I was George, I'd be pouring like a quart of it down the action and the barrel, and then we'd be smoking, remember?
He likes it when it smokes.
That's how he cleans his gun. Sorry, George, I threw you under the bus there. Anyways, yeah, you know, it depends on, you know, what I do. I use it pretty sparingly when I'm cleaning, and then I put a few drops in the action, and it should be good to go. I don't know, what about you guys?
Well, too much oil can cause it to you're going to prematurely wear out, because it actually it holds stuff, it holds the dirt and the debris and everything, and it'll start stuff to binding up. Especially as we were saying in the cold weather, it gums up. Sometimes it could actually freeze. So generally moving parts, metal and metal, need a little bit of lubrication. That's another part where you should read your manual, because the owner's manual will tell you where the manufacturer recommends lubrication on the firearm itself. For example, most of the manuals will tell you not to put any lubrication on the bolt face. The Grand Power will tell you to put lubrication on the bolt face because it's a bearing surface. So the manual will always tell you where the manufacturer suggests lubricating the firearm. Now, there's a lot of non-tox stuff out there. What's some of the advantages of using a non-tox, Kelly?
It's non-toxic.
True.
There's a pro. So you guys have lifted some of the things here. Like, it doesn't smell bad. It doesn't absorb through your skin, which is a good thing. And it's less likely to damage the other parts of your firearm, like the plastic sock or anything like that, which, as you said, WD-40 actually does. And it's a good option if you have kids or pets. Don't forget
yes.
pets.
Yes,
yes. Yeah, so, yeah. So that's some of the pros to using it. And the downside is that it's basically vegetable-based, and it does mean it's biodegradable, right? But it also, it turns bad as well. I've seen it on, you have a picture of it here, the listeners can't see it, but I've seen it on shelves and it looks pretty gross too.
Yeah, that's actually my bottle of frog food from downstairs. You can see.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. So your frog lube looks pretty gross there, Thomas.
Yeah, it does. Okay. The inside's nice and green.
Well, that's good. But the outside, well, it looks like fungus. Anyways, you can't use it as a cleaner really either, and it's not recommended. As a lubricant, well, frog lube is a lubricant, isn't it?
Well, you can use it as a cleaner, but then you should thoroughly remove it and then lubricate. Because the contact starts to rot when exposed to the air. And although it might taste minty green on toast, this degrading process gets even faster when it's exposed to heat of your gun. And then debris and residue adhere to the frog lube, and the parts become glued together.
So, yeah, you're not putting that on toast.
No. It does taste minty, though.
Well, don't eat the damn stuff. Come on. That's gross. So, it'll rot.
So what
don't
I'm,
eat it.
So what I'm hearing is I should just go grab the vegetable oil underneath the sink and use that.
Well, that goes bad too, actually.
Yeah, vegetable oil goes bad too. It becomes caustic as
rancid.
Well. Rancid. Thank you. That's a better word. Rancid.
I actually discovered that today. I pulled some out and I smelled it. Oh, that doesn't smell good. I'm not using that.
Awesome. Thank you. Anyways. Yeah. Don't use it. So, no. Frog lube. So, I always thought the frog lube was actually a lubricant, too.
It is.
Well, then why did you say it's not a lubricant?
I said don't use it as a lubricant. It's good as a cleaner, but then remove it. Because if you leave it in there, it starts to rot, and then it glues everything together. Prime example, actually, it was Chris Rakowski from Action Shooting Radio that turned me on to frog lube. He showed up one time at the club, and he had all these little sample tubes, and he's handing them out. And it worked really good until you ran the gun a few times, and you notice it's all turning brown. And then he actually started having problems at matches because some got in his firing pin chamber, and it literally glued his firing pin. So he discovered it was actually the frog lube that was giving him problems. And then I hadn't used that Smith & Wesson Model 22A for 6-7 months. And the last thing I had lubed it was frog lube. And when I did the complete disassemble on it about 6 months ago, it had all rotted inside. It all turned brown and gungy and stuff. So it's very difficult to get it all out once it starts to rot because it glues to your side. So it was
so
really.
Why don't you use some Break Free on it and spread it all, you know, spray it all down and then.
I did.
All right.
I did. So it's that bottle's just sitting down there. Just remind me not to use it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And toxic cleaners, they won't have an immediate effect on your health. And really, it could only become an issue if you're using it regularly, like cleaning your gun, I'd almost say excessively, somewhere where you don't have very good airflow in it. So there's a buildup of the toxicity. There we go.
Say it three times fast now.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I could barely say it once slow.
Well, you don't really want to be cleaning your gun in a small enclosed place without any ventilation at all, do you?
No. But some people might get banished to their basement or something like that, to the smallest room of their house. To do
the man room.
Or the small man cave upstairs with no ventilation, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. So it's important to get good airflow in there. And also wear latex gloves, things like that, just to keep yourself a little bit of separation there.
Well, yeah, because, you know, like, how many bolts and bolt
I have a box of them downstairs.
Well, I think I cleaned 3 or 4 bolt carrier groups on the weekend, last weekend, right? And I just got my nails done. So, you know what? You really got to wear gloves. It ruins your manicures. Come on.
Oh, it does. It does. Like, my nails are shot now.
It does.
Yep, yep.
Well, you get all the carbon. You get all the gross. Yeah.
And I wear latex gloves for cleaning. I wear latex gloves for reloading. I always wear latex gloves.
Yep, good idea. Okay.
So for cleaning, what's the best type of cleaning rod to use, Kelly?
Well, you can use all kinds of. Well, you can use all kinds of different ones. You can use brass cleaning rods that are one piece, or the pieces. You can have plastic ones with the tips on it that you can put together. You can use plain steel. You can use all kinds of different ones. You got to recognize that some of them are going to actually damage your barrel, though. So, yeah. So what would you guys suggest for, cleaning rods? And when we got to remember, you do have to remember when you're actually using the cleaning rods, the rifling that's in your barrel, to make sure you go with the direction, right? As opposed to switching back and forth.
I've switched actually to the one-piece coated rods because I find, first of all, the plane, somebody gave me a Remington stainless steel rod, and I wouldn't even use it because why use a rod that's the same hardness as my barrel?
Do you want to say that again? You dropped a bit.
Why I don't want to use a stainless steel rod in the stainless steel barrel, especially a segmented rod, because you've got little tiny segments that aren't perfectly lined up, and you can actually ding and scratch up your rifling by using a segmented rod, especially a stainless steel rod. Also, I've got the habit when I pull the rod right out of the barrel, I clean it. I run a cloth and I clean the rod every time I put it back in the barrel.
That's a good idea.
And you also want to make sure, I know the last couple pistols that I purchased came with these plastic bristle brushes for cleaning the barrel. And, of course, it doesn't come, when you push it down the barrel, the brush doesn't go all the way through. Then you're pulling it all the way back out again. So you're pulling all the crap back in through into the chamber, and it doesn't rotate freely. So you want to get a brush or make sure you have a rod, and most of them do, where the rod spins independently of the handle. So when you're putting the rod through the barrel, the rod's actually is turning with the rifling instead of being scratched against the grain of the rifling.
Scratched, you mean?
Scratched.
I was trying to figure out what that word meant.
Scratched.
Yeah. Scratched.
We don't want to talk about scratched. It's probably not.
Yeah, it itches too much. We won't talk about that.
Anyways. So you want to try and feed... You want to try and feed it the way that it actually the projectile would be going anyways.
Yep.
And then you want to try and use something that's not going to scratch your barrel.
Yep.
And then go with your rifling.
Like, I know for the new shooter, sometimes if you go to a gun shop, sometimes they will throw in a cleaning kit, and the little kits that you get from Hops, the aluminum rods and reels, the rods will actually leave aluminum deposits in the barrel is too. I know it's cost effective because you can get a cleaning kit for $15, where one of these long solid one piece rods are going to cost you $30-$40. It's important to spend the money where it needs to be spent. I would always suggest buying the one piece rod or the brass or the plastic coated rod as opposed to buying the little segmented Hops little kit, because in the long run it can do damage to your barrel. Spend the money. That's one area where you need to spend the money on the proper cleaning equipment, is get a proper rod. Anything else to add on our cleaning segment?
You mentioned a while ago about removing copper.
Mm-hmm.
What should you be looking for to, I guess, indicate that you need to remove copper?
You can physically see the copper in the barrel. If you shine a light source, you will see the layers of copper built up between the lands and the grooves. Another thing we didn't mention is that there is an electronic way to remove copper fouling too. There is, I think Outers makes a kit where you put a rod down the barrel and you hook up a couple electrical contacts, and it's expensive. I think it's a couple hundred dollars for this kit, but you can electronically remove the copper fouling. And it's much easier. You don't have to use all the chemicals, but as I said, the cost is there. But if you can afford it, it's another option for cleaning your barrel.
Yep. Okay.
Okay.
Good. Current events. I guess we'll get on to cleaning. Anything else in the cleaning segment?
Well, I just want to say go clean your guns.
Actually, I have to clean the 22.
All right. Hey, did we ever get a hold of Georgie Borgie?
Yep, I've been talking to him.
Okay. Is he able to be added to the call or no?
Yep, it sounds like he will. Let me just find where George. There he is.
Georgie. Okay.
So why don't we actually try and add George? Just take a moment and we'll see if we can add him.
Hey, George is here. So George, what did you do in guns this week before we go into current events?
This week I didn't do anything in guns. I got to see my granddaughter, Lillian.
Yay.
But I last week I was able to make it on the show last week, but I sighted in my dad's Mosin. And
that?
I had mentioned I had a bit of a sore shoulder. But I love the Mosin. I think they're awesome, awesome rifles. And I was able to get it sighted in to about an inch. And I had made the comment that a more experienced rifleman could probably have them touching. And a listener kind of took me to task on that I was overly optimistic. So I just like to say, to those that have shot with me and know how horrible of a shot I am, if I can get it down to within an inch, then somebody much more experienced, I think, could have got the hole touching. And the thing, I don't know how heavy that trigger is, but holy cow, it is brutal.
How far were you shooting it?
50 yards.
Okay.
Or 50 meters. 50 yards, I guess.
Close enough.
So, and it's the sniper version. So it's the one that's got the scope mount on it, if you call it that. It's the sniper version.
Now, is it the original scope that came with the rifle?
Yeah. Yeah,
oh,
it's the actual scoped version of the Mosin.
Another thing cut away for your inheritance.
Yeah, I always say, I say that to my dad every time. I said, a new gun for you is a new gun for me. I even tell him I say it on the show. Well, it's true. He's getting quite the collection.
Excellent.
In other words, you're getting quite the collection.
Yeah, he's getting suspicious of me. So the last time he's like, you know what? Maybe I won't leave you the gun collection. I don't want to be departing and meeting my maker sooner than I need to be.
Well, he can always put me down as well.
No, they're mine. Sorry, go ahead.
Just to go back a little bit, who were you visiting today?
My granddaughter.
Tell us about this. Your grandpa?
Yeah, my oldest daughter, Sarah, and her boyfriend had a baby.
Oh, excellent.
3 weeks ago.
Excellent.
So
now it's not Georgie and, Orgy, it's Grandpa George.
Yeah. And they're a little bit on the young side. And all the adults kind of had a chuckle because they're trying to institute a rule that if the baby poops while you're holding it, you have to change the diaper. And
we
all just kind of laughed and said, no. The baby goes back to mom and dad.
That's the way it works.
That was a great visit. Yeah. So lots of pictures were had. And I think I posted up like 30 pictures.
Oh, well, congratulations.
People holding it, so.
Good stuff.
Thank you very much. I'm thoroughly enjoying grandpahood. I'm not even 40 yet. I'm a grandpa. But I'm loving it.
That's good. Yay.
Yeah, everyone's doing well. Mom and baby are doing well. New dad is gleaming and glowing, so.
Well, that's wonderful news. Yeah. Glad everybody is healthy.
Yep.
I have a question for you, George.
Other thing? Sure.
Are you using hands free talking on your phone? You're driving.
Yes, I am. Oh yeah. Okay. So the reason why my audio is not the greatest is I'm actually driving my truck. Hold on, I won't have anyone near me. I'll blast my air horn. Oh, and there's the dog. So, yes, Renegade. Yes. That's my
You're
security.
Our trucker.
I am a trucker. I'm a big boy trucker.
You're a big boy trucker. And you're down in the States right now.
Yeah, I just crossed the border.
They let you in?
They let me in. Luckily, I'm sure. I was on the call, and then I hit the border just as the show was starting, and then I lost my signal. So.
Yeah, you did.
That's why I'm joining in at the end of the show.
Well, we're glad we had you.
And let's see, what else is new? I signed up for an RO course.
Oh, excellent.
So I'll be doing a CSSA RO course in June.
At Kremlin?
Pardon?
Is it happening at Kremlin?
No, it's their head office.
Oh,
yeah,
okay. Alright.
Yep,
so you're gonna do it there.
I'll be able to do some RO duties at the charity shoots.
Coolness.
Actually, you missed it. Well, Kelly did her RO course this weekend, and so did Kevin, so she's going to be an RO also.
Yeah, I did it. Kevin did it. Kevin's already done his course a long time ago, so I did it this weekend.
So we just have to find a course for Mike.
Yep. We'll work on it.
So let's carry on to the
next. Ottawa's just a short drive from Toronto.
Yeah. They take you, 4 hours to get to Toronto?
4 hours?
Yeah.
Yeah,
so wake up at, 4 hours. 4 a.m., get there for 8, you know, do an 8-hour course, hop back in the car.
With a very pregnant wife?
For,
yeah, that's going to go over well.
Yeah. Get home for like 10 o'clock at night, you're good to go.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it'll be a breeze.
Well, since Sarah's there, she can take the course too.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I'm sure that will go over well.
Yeah, I'm sure it will too.
Hey, why don't we start with the events again?
Okay, I tried.
I'm trying to get you back on track.
So what's the first event, Miss Kelly?
Oh, I get to do it? All right.
You're very good at it.
The 6th annual Podcasters Charity Shoot is being held on June 25th at the District Brockville District Fish and Game Club. The event is open to everyone. Hello, everyone. If you haven't already signed up. It's only $35, and you're going to get a chance to win a NewsCon 41 shotgun. So sign up. All you have to do is actually visit the events page on Facebook for the 6th annual Podcasters Charity Shoot. Ask to join the events page and we'll add you. Right at the top of the events page is the registration form. Or you can actually go onto our website at newshootercanada.ca and again go to the charity shoot portion of that website and the registration is there as well. And if you're coming from out of province, this is for you, Filthy. You need to actually sign up so that you can get your personalized ATT and you can so you can bring your restricted firearms as well. So, yeah, that's it for the charity shoot. But just a reminder that RJ Woods from Fire Arts Solutions Training, he's going to be doing a handgun fundamental course and urban pistol course on the Friday. It's $50. There are still 2 spots left. And you can sign up for that, and it'll be fun. It'll be on the Friday. And just a reminder about RJ as well. He's an amazing guy, really seriously. He is going to be donating his fees from the Handgun Fundamental course back to Soldier On. But the other thing he's doing as well is he's bringing the Tango Yankee Project chips. He's Canada's official supplier of those. So he's going to be bringing those to the charity shoot, and on the Saturday he's going to be selling the Tango Yankee Project chips, and 100% of the proceeds from the chips will be going back to Soldier On as well. So, yeah, check him out, sign up for his course. It's going to be lots of fun in that as well. So,
excellent. And yep. Event two we have is actually happening this weekend. The 2016 Don Moore Memorial Pistol Match will be held at the Connaught D&D Ranges, Department of National Defense, on May 20th, 21st, and 22nd. So that's the Victoria Day weekend. The event will consist of a Canadian 1800 NRA match, an ISSF standard pistol, air pistol, sports pistol, centerfire pistol, and free pistol, and a 9mm service pistol match, a 1500 PPC match, a snub nose, and a slug gun match. Competitors can register online at www.targetscores.com or use the PDF form that's on their website. Paying at the range at the day of the match is perfectly fine, or competitors can print out the registration and mail in a check if you wish. As usual, the final registration will occur in the lobby of the RCMP IFR building just past the ranges on the right side of Shirley Boulevard. Air pistols will be indoor at Air 4 range. If competitors shoot on Friday evening, they can pay then rather than the RCMP lobby. Any emails, Mike?
As of today, nope. But we do have a Facebook message from Mark.
Okay.
It says, thanks for doing the mounted shooting show a while back. It did encourage me to get out and try it. I went to a beginner's clinic with the Manitoba Mounted Shooting Association yesterday. It was a very good introduction to the sport for both horse and rider.
Excellent. He also posted a picture of him on the horse on the Facebook page. So thanks, Mark.
And and I commented and asked him how his horse handled the noises and that, the sounds, and that it did just fine. So
excellent.
Awesome. Very sure.
So as of May 15th, no iTunes reviews. So give us reviews or some stars on iTunes. We'd love to hear from you. Facebook as of today was 811 Facebook likes.
Mm-hmm. I just added another one to it.
Excellent. Any closing comments from anybody?
For me, just go out and join one of our advocacy groups, either the CCFR, Canadian Coalition for Firearms Rights, or the CSSA, or the CFI. Go out and join them, and, you know, they support us, so we should support them. That's for me,
yeah.
Kelly.
We should support them. They're doing a lot of fine work. The CCFR especially got behind the AR-15 petition, and that got presented in Parliament last week, so it's good to see our groups out there active, involved in everything, so it's nice to see. Anything from you, Mike or George?
Nope.
Yeah, I'm going to kind of piggyback on Kelly and the CCFR. The Fort Mac thing, Tracy got right on Facebook and just started just bombing social media, helping and connecting people with the campsites on ranges so people could get their restricted out of their homes and still be legal. And they really, they were just all over Facebook, trying to connect people and get people, out of Fort Mac with their guns and, in the legal way and everything else. So I just like to really kind of give them a shout out. I was very impressed and, Tracy, at least on my Facebook, Tracy was really, really active.
She actually found a gun club where people could stay. That way they could take their restricted there.
Yep.
That was really nice of her.
Yeah, I was quite impressed, yeah. I was very skeptical in the very, very beginning of them because they're a new group, and I was like, well, we'll see what happens. And I've been quite pleased and very impressed with them. They seem to be like they're the real deal. Like Thomas, you had mentioned with the e-petition and then the Fort Mac, that whole thing, and they went like gangbusters, so.
So now you're going to join.
You know what? I'm going to join, and I don't say that lightly because right now CSSA is the only one I'm a member of, and I'm not even a member of Ontario Federation of Hunters and Anglers anymore. So, but yeah, I've got no problems joining up with them.
That's good.
And it's official. I'm on the record now saying that. So now I'm obligated.
All right. So when you see Tracy at the charity shoot, she'll have a official form for you to fill out.
And I will.
There you go.
Okay. shout outs. Kelly?
I have one. It's for Ken. Ken, my poutine junkie friend.
Oh, Kowalski?
I can't wait. Yeah. We're trying to get him to come up here and do one of the a medical trauma training thing. So if he comes up here, I promise to take him into Toronto and do a poutine burrito.
Yeah, Brian was actually trying to talk him into it on the last show. So yeah, it'd be great to get Brian up here to teach Ken up here to teach a course.
Yeah, it would be fun.
My shout out is to Wolf Bullets for taking the time to answer my questions today, and also a nice big shout out for jumping on board and being a charity shoot sponsor. We really appreciate it, Wolf. And then Fred from Firearms Outlet Canada, you rock. And Bond, thank you for all the information. Bond's always really friendly and a wealth of knowledge. Whenever I go in the store, he always takes the time to sit there and talk to me for a bit. I always get lots of good information from him. And from my neighbor, Carlene, who does not listen, but thank you for taking care of Colt for me while Terry's been in the hospital. I do appreciate it.
Now you got to get her to listen.
I've tried.
Tell her that we mentioned her on here.
Oh, I will. I will tell her that I gave her a shout out at the end of the show. I've tried to take her to the range. I've tried to talk her into shooting for the last year, but she's not into it. So I just want to say thank you for all the help. Colt really appreciates it.
Yeah. Can I ask, or not ask, can I just say something about Bon? Bon is amazing. IPSC. Lots of knowledge. So if go on into Firearms Outlet Canada and talk to Bon about IPSC.
We lost the episode. We had a great episode, and Kelly and I both lost the episode. Our both recorders failed, and Bon was a wealth of information. So
yeah, he was.
We'd like to get Fred and Bon back on, even just the two of them if we can, because it was a really good show. We both felt really bad for losing it. So, yes, I agree. Bon is awesome. Any shout-outs, Mike?
My shout-out just goes out to all the volunteers at the EOSC Ontario Provincials match this weekend. There was a lot of them there.
You always mention them, and you know what? They are the backbone of you guys being able to have those matches, aren't they?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I happen to know, because I was talking to a few of them on Friday, they had built all new target stands, they built all new swingers, they built new walls. Pretty much everything that was at that match was pretty much brand new.
That's cool.
So it's a lot of work.
Yeah, they put in, I was talking to them, and they said they had been putting in weeks and weeks of time at, you know, someone's house, building all these things, putting it all together. So that, and I'm sure the cleanup was long. I had to take off in order to get home in time for this, but they had to clean everything up, and yeah, it ran well. They did a great job.
Excellent.
Okay.
George, any shout outs?
No, I guess my closing comment was kind of my shout out.
Okay, folks, well, I guess that wraps up another episode of New Shooter Canada. So, George, do your famous shout-out.
All right, until next time, keep your barrels pointed downrange and smoke it.
Take your kids shooting.
Keep it classy.
Time spent at the range is time spent with family.
Good night, everybody, and thank you for spending the evening with us.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Great. Good night, Renegade.
Winchester tag. I like my double barrel.
Thank you for taking the time and listening to our show. Our audience is important to us, and we encourage our listeners to contact the show with feedback, suggestions, or questions that you may have. You can contact the guys at hosts@newshootercanada.ca, and please like our Facebook page. Thanks for listening, and have a groovy day.